Good morning. I'm Shannon from the University of California, San Diego, on the philosophy program, and I'm here to introduce our speakers. We have one so far. This is Stephanie Moraine, and she's currently at the Berman Institute for Bioethics at Johns Hopkins. She's a HECBD fellow there, and she has an MPH and a PhD. PhD in health policy and MPH in the history of ethics of public health. Yes?
Yeah.
Is that correct? And she's going to be talking to us today about the thoughts of government or nanny state. So Stephanie will be speaking for about 20 minutes, and then we'll take some questions. I do ask everyone to please queue up at the microphone, so we'll just go with whoever queues up first, and we'll listen to her. Take questions for about 10 minutes, and hopefully Thaddeus will be with us then.
Great. I've been instructed to make sure I use the microphone, so I will attempt to do so, although I have a habit of wandering, so if need be, you can tell me to nudge back over.
Do you want us to hook you up?
No, because then I forget to advance my slides. I have a bad habit of doing that. So, so good morning. This is actually more people than I expected for 8 a.m., so you must all be like me and still stuck on East Coast time. I've been up since 4 a.m., so here we are, happily caffeinated. So, Cammie said, I'm going to be speaking on responsible government or nanny state, evaluating the legitimacy of public health laws for non-communicable disease. So in recent years, we've seen public health laws be the source of vigorous debate. Should a city restrict soda size to reduce obesity rates? Should food manufacturers be required to post calorie information on menus and menu boards? Should food manufacturers be prohibited from using trans fat in their products? So these questions pose a central challenge for public health. What's the appropriate role of government in responding to non-communicable disease? And specifically, to what degree can the state restrict individual freedoms to reduce the burden of obesity and related conditions, which, as non-communicable diseases, present no direct risk of harm to others? So these questions obviously require empirical assessments, for a regulation's effectiveness is a key consideration for any evaluation of its permissibility. However, the controversy over public health strategies is often driven not solely or even primarily about disagreements about how effective we expect them to be. Instead, these debates are better understood as involving contested understandings of legitimacy. So how extensive is the moral authority of the government to protect and promote the health of the public? Does this authority extend so broadly as to include the capacity to address non-communicable disease prevention through the regulation of individual health behaviors? So a few years ago, I began this empirical investigation into this question. So what was really interested in understanding is, what's the public's perception of these questions? How far does the public think we should go to address obesity control? What are public attitudes towards these New York City-style Bloomberg health laws? So I've been designing public opinion studies to address this question. But I also became interested in what guidance, if any, political theory might provide. So how might theories of government authority inform debates about contemporary public health policies? Now, this is time to make some disclosures. Cue the cheesy disclosure slide. I'm not a political theorist, so this is an interesting topic for me to be taking on. I am considerably more comfortable with empirical methodologies than I am with philosophy texts. Nevertheless, I'm really interested in this question. What's the role that political theory can play in helping to frame these contemporary policy debates, particularly these controversies over public health authority for non-communicable disease? And this question of public health legitimacy seems to involve a question that's at the heart of political theory. So how should we understand the relationship between the government's power or even duty to secure the public's welfare against the constraint to preserve the liberty of its citizens? So to date, much of this contemporary discourse has focused on the harm principle of John Stuart Mill. So according to Mill, the only purpose for which power can rightfully be exercised over any member of a civilized community against his will is to prevent harm to others. His own good, either physical or moral, is not sufficient warrant. Now, this principle has obvious intuitive appeal. By making harm to others the criterion for judging the legitimacy of government authority, Mill seems to present us with a straightforward test. It's often expressed as kind of this playground mantra, you can swing your fist as long as it doesn't hit my nose. But so if an activity threatens to cause harm to others, the state then has a reason to interfere. If that activity does not, the state must refrain from interference. However, as prior commentators have noted, the harm principle has several limitations. And what I want to suggest is that these limitations should motivate us to search for whether there might be an alternative principle that could help guide our decision as to when public health is acting appropriately and when it's gone too far. And what I want to propose here is that John Rawls' liberal principle of legitimacy may prevent such a suitable alternative. Now, again, another caveat. The literature is replete with evaluations of Mill's Horn principle and with its application to contemporary policy debates. I cannot begin to do justice to that discussion here, both because of time constraints and because of that disclosure. I'm not a political theorist. But I do want to briefly mention two limitations that I find particularly problematic for the Horn principle when we evaluate the legitimacy, evaluating government authority for obesity and these related conditions. So first is the issue of conceptual ambiguities. So Mill seems to present us this straightforward test. It's pretty easy to figure out, you know, if I swing my hand and it hits your nose, there's a harm there. I broke your nose, if I had a good punch at least. But when we're actually applying it to contemporary policy debates, determining when something constitutes a harm and when that conduct can be said to harm others ends up being a really controversial and challenging task. So as numerous scholars have made this claim, that harm ends up being a very vague concept. Furthermore, this vagueness often means that nearly every human act, a claim can be made that nearly every human action can plausibly link to be causing some harm, however remote. If this is the case, then it raises some concerns for the harm principle, as it then seems unable to provide us with a principled limit for state authority. So concerningly, harm, rather than serving as a limit against state intrusion, may then end up providing the very justification for state action. Now, second, I think the harm principle gives inadequate attention to liberty. Now, why would I make this claim? So the harm principle directs us to evaluate laws based upon their rationale. What's the aim of the law? If the aim is to prevent harm to others, then the state has a reason to act. However, once that action has been deemed to cause harm, the harm principle provides us with no principled limits by which to determine how the state can regulate to address that harm. So taking the case of obesity, the harm principle then can't distinguish between different policy options, even when those policy options may involve dramatically different implications or intrusions upon individual liberty. And so given these limitations, it at least seems worth exploring what alternative principles might exist for evaluating the legitimacy of public health authority, particularly these questions related to obesity control. What I want to suggest is that John Rawls' liberal principle of legitimacy may present such an alternative. Now, again, in presenting this test in a 15-minute presentation, I'm having to condense several hundred pages of political theory into about 30 seconds. So my apologies to Rawls in advance and to the philosophers in the room for what I admit will be a slapdash job. However, I am happy to discuss in more detail the derivation of the principle after the session and to provide anyone who's interested with a full copy of the paper, should that be of interest to you later. So here's my quick and dirty take on Rawls. So Rawls argues that for a law to be legitimate, it must be exercised in accordance with a legitimation-worthy constitution. Well, what does that mean? For Rawls, this means that a law must be consistent with the constitution that secures the constitutional essentials established by the first principle of justice. And that first principle of justice demands that each person has the same indefeasible claim to a fully adequate scheme of equal basic liberties. And that scheme has to be compatible with the same scheme of liberties for all. So in establishing this requirement, what Rawls does, similar to Mill, is aims to secure for individuals a zone of non-interference over some range of choices. Unlike Mill, however, the zone Rawls protects isn't delineated by